Hello and welcome to the all-new Eastern Daily Press Formula One podcast. My name is Michael Bailey and I'm here to discuss an action-packed Spanish Grand Prix weekend. And I'm not alone. After each race, we'll have a panel to chew over the weekend. And this week, I have a full complement of three guests. First, I'll have my regular contributor. It's Perry Hamilton. To my right, I also have David Tillier, who is the editor of gridwalk.tv website, and Formula One fan Ben Weaver. Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
Very well.
Good. Good. Thank you, yeah. And everyone good. Nodded as well, yes. Which is always good to see. I like to see that. Okay, guys. Well, first up, Barcelona Grand, the Spanish Grand Prix of Barcelona. It was a fantastic race weekend, I thought. We were almost being spoilt with these, round five. Give us your reactions first up. Perry, you first.
Cracking race, and I was really looking forward to it. Thought it was great. A lot of action. You don't normally see that much passing at Barcelona. It was the first thing that sort of jumped out at me. Precisely. And I thought it was all going to be limited to that DRS zone, but we saw some absolutely great shots up the inside around turn 11, which was outstanding, and some real excitement and a great win at the end of the day for Williams. I'm a big fan from I remember being back in my youth, about 7-6 years old, watching Formula One, and Williams was my team. And growing up, I was a real fan of Damon Hill, so still stuck with it. And now seeing them back to their winning ways is absolutely great.
I know. I imagine everyone had a little talk about predictions ahead of Barcelona. I can't imagine one person who came up with Pastor Maldonado as a possible race winner. David, how did you enjoy that weekend?
Yeah, it was really, really good. Again, like you say, it's not what I expected to get to see from the weekend, to be honest. Before the events that unfolded with Hamilton qualifying, I expected Hamilton to sort of run away with it and grab his first win of the season, but unfortunately that didn't happen, which is a shame as a British Formula One fan.
Too true.
But at the same time, it's actually really nice to see a different face on the top step. Pastor did really well. I'm slightly ashamed to say that I actually wrote him off last year and said that he didn't deserve the Williams seat and they should have looked elsewhere. But
you're in good company, David. Don't worry.
I'm quite happy to eat my words on that front, and I'm quite happy to say that he did a fantastic job and thoroughly deserved it. So. Yeah, it's been like a lot of the races so far this year. You expect them to be fairly run of the mill. You have a certain expectation for how much excitement there's going to be, and so far this year, it's two or three or four times as exciting as it has been in previous years. So yeah, no, brilliant race.
Absolutely, Ben. It just couldn't take your eyes off it, could you? And no. Even at Barcelona, where it's
no, it was a great weekend. Obviously, as David said about the disappointment after Hamilton. I thought he was going to run away with it as well. I don't think anyone put Maldonado anywhere near the podium, let alone on the top set. Alonso had a good weekend as well, obviously. But I think, as Perry said, Williams is sort of my second team as well on the backbone. You all sort of look what they're doing from when we were younger. But no, it was a great weekend. Obviously, the last 11 years, the winners come from the front row, and I expected that to be the same when Hamilton cleared up on qualifying. Still turned out the same way, but it was a great weekend for Williams. Definitely.
Well, let's go through qualifying first then, shall we? Lewis Hamilton put in it was half a second, wasn't he, ahead of Pastor Maldonado, I think, when he put in his flying lap. It didn't seem much of a surprise because McLaren has obviously had pace and it's got a nice new nose job as well. We all like the new nose.
It looks nice from the front. It looks a little bit weird from the sort of top camera angle.
It does.
It's kind of slightly...
Yeah. It does.
It just looks a bit odd. But it's still prettier than pretty much any other car on the grid.
Well,
so.
Yeah, exactly. Which probably isn't hard either. So Hamilton was clearly fastest from his final flying lap in Q3, but pulls along to the side of the track before getting to the pits. We have a problem. Make sure you pull the car over. And from that point, you're probably all a little bit curious as to what's going on. Mm. The car wasn't fueled enough to take him all the way around. That's a thing that's pretty dimly viewed upon by the FIA. And he sent right back to the bottom. I suppose there's two things here. You can't argue with the decision by the FIA, but what are McLaren doing in getting it that wrong? And secondly, Hamilton's reaction to that. Because I think 12 months ago, we wouldn't have seen the kind of response we had on Saturday. What do you think, Perry?
I thought Hamilton showed great maturity, which is the key thing. considering when you have to change out a gearbox or something like that, you only, you know, lose, what was it, 5 places?
Yeah, 5.
And to have not enough fuel, I mean, Whitmarsh came out and said he thought that the ruling was harsh, and he thought that it was, you know, that the gap was so large between Lewis and Pastor that it was clearly understandable that it wasn't a lack of fuel that gave him that extra pace.
We put and so little fuel in
yeah,
the
exactly.
car that
we,
it couldn't possibly
we actually
the
filled
fuel.
It with, you know, clouds and fluff and made it go faster that way. But it's an understandable point, and you can see the frustration build in McLaren, and it's just another thing to build on. That's it's the little things that build up. So we've seen them have issues in at their pit stops during the race as well, and now this happening in qualifying and taking away their pole position. But as again, Lewis showed great maturity, started from the back of the grid, came through and made some absolutely cracking manoeuvres, not just on his tyre strategy, the only one to run a two-stop, which, you know, this year I thought was going to be unheard of, actually making it work and nursing his tyres very well. And again, to come through from the back of the grid like that and to avoid the collisions that you could think would be coming when he's got to make up these places and gain these points. And you think, oh, Lewis of old, as you said, 12 months ago, maybe would have thrown it up the inside a little too quickly, maybe would have been a little late on the brakes, and you would expect some kind of incident. I still always hold my breath when he gets a good eyeful of Massa's gearbox.
weren't we all?
But I think he did very well considering the situation. And in my opinion, was the better McLaren driver on the weekend.
Absolutely. Ben, I mean, what were you expecting when you heard? I mean, I only actually caught the news a minute or two before they actually started racing on the Sunday. But, I mean, what would you have expected Hamilton's reaction to be? I mean, especially, he seems to have grown up a lot, hasn't he, since last season?
Well, yeah, I mean, the key word he's used all season is consistency. He's not going to throw away points just to get a win. He wants to go on the podium every race. Obviously, he put in a blinding lap, which was, I agree with Perry, it's not just down to the fuel. I think they were quick enough anyway. It was a mistake, but when he came out, I did expect him to maybe, you know, put the team down a little, like he would have done a year ago. Argue with the stewards, but he came out and just said he was going to go out and give it all he had, and that's exactly what he did. And as you say, you know, he started 24th, finished ahead of his teammate on a two-stop strategy, which you know, was unheard of. But yeah, it's a fantastic drive, 100%.
Jensen and Lewis both mentioning the tyre situation after the race on Sunday, it must be said. David, how does a team not put enough fuel in its car for the qualifying lap? What do you think they went wrong?
Well, just sort of to explain things a little bit better, it's not quite so much that Lewis stopped on the side of the track. They don't have a problem with that. I mean, Jensen did it last year when he did, you know, I think, I forget which race it was, but he won one of the races and he stopped on the side of the track. And the reason that they stopped so quickly is because they have to provide a fuel sample to the FIA at the end of the session. And there has to be sufficient fuel left in the system, not necessarily in the tank, but in the system, for the FIA to test it to make sure they're not using any kind of illegal fuels or anything. They're not, you know, breaking the rules as such. When they then took the car back and they tried to get this fuel sample from it, there wasn't sufficient fuel in the system, so they couldn't do this test. And that's why Hamilton was ended up at the back rather than, you know, a sort of lighter penalty. They actually sort of took away his time altogether, so therefore there was no option for him to go, you know, anywhere other than 24th. I mean, it's really frustrating, but like the guys have said, I mean, Lewis handled it like, you wouldn't expect him to. You know, he's normally a bit of a hothead, or can be a bit of a hothead, but this year he's been a lot more relaxed and, yeah, very, very impressed with him, I have to say. And definitely outclassed Jensen on the Saturday.
So it's been a delight to watch him, I think, and the almost relish he had for going back to his karting days and taking on a full grid. Yeah. Yes. Stacked up in front of him. You can see that from the replays of the start as well. So, should we just get out of the way? You two, Ben and Perry, both mentioned Williams, your second teams.
Well, yes. I mean,
so, first teams?
I'd probably say it was McLaren.
McLaren.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Hamilton fan. So, if you know, I am a McLaren fan because he's there, but I am solely a Hamilton fan.
That's fine. No, it's just good to know, I always think. David, do you have a favourite?
I'm probably definitely a McLaren fan, but I am a diehard Jensen fan.
I died in the wool. Were you a fan of the goatee? Because I wasn't. I thought he looked about 50 with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought he looked quite good with a moustache when he did for November last year.
Doesn't everyone.
Proper gent.
But no, my friends will tell anyone I'm sort of borderline obsessive with how much of a fan of Jensen I am. I've actually got two full-size replica helmets of his on my shelf.
Wow, there we go.
And several other signed bits and pieces. So
we'll get you to bring those
but
in.
I'll try not to be biased.
Of course. So, that's all good. That's all good. I always think it's just interesting because it's an interesting insight into how you've grown up with the sport. Obviously, I'm a Formula One correspondent, so I'm completely unbiased. Pastor Maldonado, then, pole by default. He's got, in itself, we're almost brushing over it, but it's a fantastic performance. With the pace that he also showed in FP1 and FP3, it has to be said, when he was very quick too. He's on pole. Williams' first pole for anyone know?
Since 2009.
Bam. Well done. Yes,
indeed. 2009.
Nico Hülkenberg, of course. And he's got Fernando Alonso alongside him in a Ferrari that's supposed to be rubbish, but keeps seemingly picking up these good results. And did any of us think the Pastor would still be ahead after the first corner?
No.
No, good. Absolutely not. It was a brilliant run down to the first corner, wasn't it? Because Pastor Maldonado did everything he could to effectively run Alonso off the track in a very fair way. It was a great start from then on. Alonso's ahead. Thoughts on the first stages of the race and then how it went? We'll start with you, David.
Yeah, I think, Pastor did actually make a really, really good start. You've got to bear in mind that Alonso is well known for these electrifying starts. The Ferrari seems to be pretty good at it, but then he was always quite good at it in a Renault as well. So there's something that Alonso just gets right and he's good at doing it. But he was guaranteed, it was a foregone conclusion, I think, that he was going to be, going first into the first corner. But to be fair to Pastor, he stayed with him. He kept up, and he didn't make it easy for Alonso. And he did what he needed to do. So, to be honest, I was focusing on them for the start of the race. I can't remember what anyone else did, to be honest. So from anywhere back from those two, I was sort of oblivious, really. But
That's fine. It might be a bit like that. Those all the cameras were following as well at times. Yeah. In terms of the race lead, Ben, it was probably the second set of pit stops, I think, wasn't it, where Pastor gained the advantage by coming in couple of laps earlier.
Yeah,
A couple of flying laps and.
Yeah, I mean, from the start, I mean, obviously Alonso got the 1 second lead that you need in the first few laps that people are really pushing for at the beginning, and from there he managed to hold the gap. But as you say, from the second pit stop, Maldonado had put in a real fast one, and came in a little bit earlier and put in those laps to get the jump. And I think it's good management. It's good team management. Williams have been around a long time. They know how to make these calls, and they made the right call at the right time, which. Going on to speaking about McLaren slightly, they're the sort of calls that McLaren used to be known for, or Button used to be known for, which I think they've made a few mistakes on this year. So Williams capitalised on a great pit stop and doing it at the right time.
Absolutely. Well, Maldonado and also Hamilton in those final stretches did a fantastic job of keeping their tyres together, so they didn't drop off. I suppose it's not the first time that Ferrari have been caught out in terms of strategy over the last season or two either. Pastor pretty much kept it in control from then. Alonso had a couple of nibbles, didn't he, leading up to the race. He sort of tried to give himself a bit of clean air to save his tyres a bit before pushing again. But in the end, it was more a case of Raikkonen catching the two of them, wasn't it? I mean, the pace at the end was phenomenal compared to the fact that they dropped off so much in the early stages, Barry.
Yeah, completely agree. And when you mentioned Kimi there, and Kimi just coming up, where he found that pace from. I mean, obviously the tyres at the front hit the cliff, but if that's the case, you wouldn't expect to see both cars dropping back at the same time. And that's when Pastor put in those faster laps and actually started making it round the track without putting any damage on his tyres, which was astounding. I thought he showed great poise throughout the race. I mean, Ben mentioned that Alonso got that over that 1 second gap that you need at the beginning of the race. I'm not sure if that wasn't so much a case of the Williams engineers on the radio to Pastor saying, it's okay, we don't need to be taking that place now because we know we've got the better strategy and we know that when it comes down to it, if after the second set of pit stops you're still behind him, we know that you've got the pace to catch up to him. So why waste the engine? Why waste the tyres now and risk stopping early? Why not just, let it pan out and let it develop? And when Alonso pitted, and Maldonado when they pitted, and he just said, go for it, and he put his foot down and he went through. And that's the kind of poise that he showed throughout the race. I mean, one of the earlier races in the season, he was second or in the lead, or he was coming in for a podium, certainly. And then he just put it in the wall. And you know, you kind of are always looking for that with an inexperienced driver who's not used to leading from the front of the pack. And I think Maldonado just showed great poise, even towards the end of the race when you could have been on the radio saying, okay, Alonso's having a nibble. Okay, you've got him behind you. Oh, actually, now Kimi's coming through the ranks. Okay, great. These are two former world champions that are, you know, biting at my rear tyres. And you've just got to show the absolute poise to keep it on the track and headed in the right direction. I think he did great.
I think he did just enough is, you know, the best way to describe it. And that's the reason he had so much pace in the last few laps as well, because he saved his tyres and then he could just eke out that gap and keep that gap to Alonso. And like I say, just enough was enough.
Indeed. It's the whole new Formula One that Michael Schumacher so detests. how many more laps do you think it would have been before Kimi caught them both? I mean, he was, what, 6 tenths? He was catching Alonso at 2 seconds a lap pretty much.
One lap would have gone past Alonso. Yeah.
He'd have had Alonso on the start finish straight. One more lap, he'd have had him on the start finish straight. He'd have been going in ahead of Alonso into turn one.
Yeah. And that Lotus was mighty in the DRS zone as well, so it wouldn't have been that much of an effort to get past.
Mm. Absolutely not.
But yeah, one or two laps, I'd say. Yeah.
Well, we'll touch a bit more on Lotus again later. Of course, Romain Grosjean finished an excellent fourth as well. What other incidents shall we bring up of the race? I suppose there's Michael Schumacher driving into the back of Bruno Senna, where Schumi was a little bit annoyed at the guy in front, and I think Bruno was a bit like, well, it's not my fault, mate. let's go through who's to blame? Come on, guys, who's to blame?
Schumacher. No doubt.
He's gone down then.
Without a doubt. Senna moved over to the right. Left in the space, going on the outside. He's going back on the racing line to break to make turn one, and you know it's racing. Schumacher should have seen that he was breaking and pulled off, and he was so desperate to get round him, which isn't like Schumacher.
I suppose, is it a problem with the DRS that you lose so much drag that it's almost difficult to halt yourself in a way, and it's easier to misjudge, or am I just being generous?
Generous.
Yeah, I think you're being generous. I think Schumacher there was. Yeah, he just completely misjudged where Senna was. I mean, if you look at the replay, yes, Senna moves across to protect his line when he moves left, but he doesn't really move back right that much at all. But then Schumacher goes the other way and just, bam, hits him. So he can't have a go at Senna for saying he moved into his way, because Senna didn't really move.
No.
And Schumacher just went into the back of him.
And it's not like Schumacher wouldn't have known that Senna in front of him is on older tyres and would have to brake earlier. The radio is constantly going with your engineers talking to you and saying, okay, next man up is so-and-so. They've been on their tyres for three, four laps longer than we have. We think this is their strategy. If you get past them, it will work out. We'll end up in the points. To say that he didn't know that Senna was going to have to brake earlier going into that corner is ridiculous. I mean, as I'm sure we've all been taught when we took our driving lessons, most of the time, 99% of the time, you rear-end someone. That's your fault.
Agreed.
And I think Schumacher doesn't have a leg to stand on there.
Not been a great few weeks for dear Schumi, has it? I don't know if whatever else really, guys, you want to talk about for the race. The thing that maybe I'd like to talk about was Sebastian Vettel, because he had a difficult time, and it was quite strange how both Red Bulls seemed to change their front noses and all of a sudden they're flying. I thought there were some quality overtaking manoeuvres from Vettel, and I'm normally quite a bit of a... I'm not the biggest fan of watching someone just get pole and then drive off into the sunset and that's it, and I thought he genuinely showed a lot of fight and talent as well on Sunday, but that's what I thought,
and with the drive-thru penalty as well, so you know, to come back from that, he went past Hamilton, he took Rosberg, he drove really well, and I'm not the biggest Vettel fan by any stretch of the imagination, but you have to hand it to him, he had a good race.
Well, there are two types of champions in Formula 1. There are the champions who can overtake and they win because they can overtake, like Jenson Button driving for Braun. He won that championship because he could overtake when his car dropped off in the middle of the season. And then there are champions like Vettel, like Schumacher, who win championships because they don't have to overtake. And for the last couple of seasons, we've seen Vettel as champion who never had to overtake. And now this season, he's proving that he can. And I think that bodes very well for the competition, going to be amped up coming through the rest of the season and through the rest of the races. But he's actually shown something a little bit more than just the ability to control a race. He's shown the ability to cut through the field, which is really, really good.
I think if you remember back to 2010, he made a lot of mistakes. And a lot of mistakes whilst trying to overtake people like Jensen and his teammate, and there were a lot of collisions. And I honestly believe that he could not be a great racer unless he was at the front. But I think, you know, these last few races we've seen him pull off some actually really quite impressive moves, and show that he has got a bit of fight in him. I wouldn't say he's the best overtaker out there, but, you know, he's, you know, definitely one of the better ones at the moment, at least what he's demonstrating in the first few races.
I suppose the frightening thing was in 2010 he was still world champion as well, which is always a worry. Okay, let's go through a couple of quick questions then, shall we? A highlight of the race? Do you gents have a moment that sticks out? Perry, do you want to go first?
I'm going to go with my highlight to the race being Kamui Kobayashi, for me, because in that Sauber that's made some fantastic improvements and have made a huge jump up towards the top of the field. When he pulled that move into turn 11, straight up the inside, layer on the brakes, I honestly, for the life of me, I think it might, was it Button?
He was overtaking. Just kissed his tyres.
Just kissed him. Which made me chuckle, because was it the same? It was in 2009 when Kamui had just taken over driving for Sauber then, and Jensen made a pass on him in Brazil. Yep. And Jensen made a great comment after the race, and he said, I kicked the back end out a little bit just to warn him off. And when Jensen, just to let him know I was there and make him hit his brakes. And as soon as Kamui shot down the inside and just that little bit later on the brakes and just bumped him, I just thought, that's brilliant. That's racing. And that is racing. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it now. But for me, that particular pass was outstanding. And Kamui's just record of bringing it home as he did in, I think it was fifth, you know, in fifth for a Sauber at that track was amazing. So my highlight of the race was Kamui Kobayashi for me.
David?
Yeah,
that is a good highlight.
I was struggling to think of one, and then of course you mentioned Kamui. I have to disagree with you on one point, though. You have said that Sauber have made some improvements. There's one thing that they haven't made an improvement on, and that's the fact they put the Chelsea badge on the side of the vehicle. But anyway, that's something else altogether.
A fair point. That would do on this and the pink and the podcast.
Indeed. Actually, to be honest, I'm probably going to have to steal that as well. I think it was. I love Kamui. He's just he's a nutter in the best sense of the word. You know, he is. It's always exciting to watch. He just seems to enjoy getting past people when other people couldn't. But I think if I had to pick another one, probably Raikkonen closing up on the back.
Brilliant.
Raikkonen, one of my new favourite drivers.
Indeed. Yeah. Fair play. Ben, have you got
in a non-biased way, I'd have to say Hamilton's double overtake on the two Toro Rosso in two turns.
Good call. That was outstanding.
One after the other, just went past them like they weren't there. Yeah. And as you said earlier about his karting experience and his background, he loves that. And just to see him do that was brilliant.
Brilliant stuff. I've got here two regular questions we'll be asking quickly in future podcasts. Driver of the weekend and team of the weekend. Can't help thinking it's going to be the same answer from all of you and on both.
I'll go different. I'll go different just to start with. I've got to say, team of the weekend for me was Lotus. Yep. Actually, they did very well.
Lotus.
They got a podium finish, and just behind Kimi was Roman Grosjean. Brought it in fourth. They drove as we've talked about before. They were dependable. They were reliable, and they were just very calm under pressure. And they did what they needed to do to bring it home. And if they keep having these kinds of finishes, and if we keep seeing different race winners and mix, you know, different teams on the podium, these kind of consistent finishes, one on the podium, one maybe a place or two behind, it's going to have them up there in the Constructors' Championship come the end of the week, at the end of the season.
Absolutely.
And I think that they managed their team very well over the weekend. They did an absolutely brilliant job.
We're third in the Championship at the moment. They were obviously second and third in Bahrain, so it's another 2x2 kind of finish for them. In Barcelona, I suppose this is probably now the time to talk about Lotus a little bit. Hethel-backed Lotus, as we call them. I know that's simplifying a horrific situation that I've written about for 2 years, but I'm not going to go into that. That's the only thing that's missing, I suppose, is it's a win, isn't it, David?
Yeah, I mean, I would have, a gut reaction, I would have said Lotus were my top team of the weekend. But actually, in fact, I probably wouldn't go that far, purely for the fact that I think they should have won it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they had the fastest car of the top three finishers. I just think they didn't capitalise on it as well as they could, and they could have won the race. But it's difficult to pick a best team of the weekend, so I'm going to go and actually pick a worst team.
Fine.
Of the weekend.
That's a good one for future podcasts as well.
And I'm going to go with McLaren, because they should know better.
Yeah. again, possibly not for the first time in a way. Yeah. Ben?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with Harry. Lotus had a fantastic weekend. They've gone from strength to strength. Obviously, I'd like to see Kimi smile a little bit more. He did get on the podium, but he just didn't seem to be very happy about it. He just wanted the race to carry on going for another four or five laps and he had the top set. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of team, I agree also with you, David, about McLaren just dropping the ball so many times this season. And in terms of driver of the weekend, obviously, Maldonado had a great weekend. I think Hamilton finishing in 8th from 24th is a great result. But yeah, yeah, you've got to give it to Maldonado for the way he drove the race.
Absolutely. You guys agree with that, driver?
I would agree with it to give it to Maldonado. I mean, as I said, my highlight was Kimi Kobayashi. And,
you can't give him driver.
I can't give him driver of the race for one. No, he was a consistent driver. He did well. He's a human highlight reel behind the steering wheel of the car.
Fifth is fine.
But you know, for the poise that he showed from losing, not being in the lead after the first corner, to come back, show the maturity, show the poise of the control, and giving Williams their first win in years, it's got to be passed to Maldonado.
Yeah, I agree, and the reason that he's got it and it's not Lewis Hamilton is that Lewis Hamilton has demonstrated time and time again that he is a fantastic racer.
Yeah.
And you put someone like Hamilton in a McLaren at the back of the grid, he's going to race and he's going to make places. Yes, he did a fantastic job, but to take what was a team which has not been doing so well in recent years and take a car which you would never expect to be on the top step of the podium, and to manage it the way that he did and keep, of all people, Fernando Alonso at bay.
In Spain.
Yeah. In Spain as well.
He just needs to drop the pay driver tag. I think if he carries on driving like he has, he'll drop that. Because I still think people see him as that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'd change my tune.
Indeed, well, as have I. As you can read in my Eastern Daily Press column, it's been on every Wednesday, my Formula One column. You can also see it on the website, but I'll plug that at the end. We are running out of time, so let's run through a couple of little bits. Obviously, we've got to touch on Caterham, Hingham-backed Caterham. We have Hethel-backed Lotus and Hingham-backed Caterham. Reliability, two-car finish, which is more than the other two new teams go. But I suppose they're a bit screwed at the moment, aren't they? Because the team they're effectively chasing at the moment is Ferrari and Felipe Massa. I mean, that just almost explains what's happened to the midfield that they were supposed to be trying to get involved in.
Either that or explains how bad Felipe Massa is. But
well, that as well. There we go. It's a difficult one for Caterham, I think, and I suppose it's going to be one that hopefully time will see them improve. Felipe Massa, it's also be said, is being put under pressure publicly by Ferrari now. Quick one word answer, gents, is he still going to be there at the end of the season in terms for the last race?
No.
No way.
I
agree.
If he is, he doesn't deserve to be.
Who goes in instead?
Perez.
Ooh, Perez is a good shout, but then who do you have to replace him at Sauber? Because Sauber have come out time and again and have said, he's not going anywhere, he's our driver. But then do you give up one of your good drivers or do you give up your engines for the next 5 years? It's not that tough a question.
Would Massa be happier if he did a swap and ended up driving for Sauber?
That would be an interesting
would it
one.
Be a, would,
Sauber,
change
would Sauber want Massa? Sauber That's Massa. The question.
I wouldn't want Massa back.
It's also mentioned, wasn't there, that Paul de Resta could possibly
Sutil back into the Force India. I read today.
Names like Nick Heidfeld still floating around out there, who we've seen do a dependable job despite legal based temper tantrums over the last season. But I mean, he's a dependable driver that you can bring in, and he finishes, and that's what you're after. He just doesn't finish very highly.
Yeah.
Well, Ferrari could bring in just a driver to finish the season off, and then there'll be some big names available at the end of the season, like Webber.
Yep.
Hamilton's contract is up. You never know where they're going to be at the end of the season, so yeah. they may take the risk.
They need a number two driver, though. They can't have another number one driver. It's not the way that Ferrari works, not the way that Alonso works. Mm. So Perez is the obvious choice. Perez is the new Massa. That's what they did with Massa. They brought Massa along from Sauber, and Massa was looking pretty racy, and they needed a number two driver. Perez ticks all the boxes, and he is a Ferrari driver. He's a young Ferrari driver, and he's come up through the ranks with them. So I would be surprised if it's anything else other than Perez.
We shall see. We've got now, I can't remember if it's 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks, isn't it? Until the next race, Monaco, Monte Carlo. Ah, this makes me sort of sigh as a giddy kid just thinking about it. What are we thinking gents, about that race. Just a quick point, just to look ahead, misty eye. There's been a couple of safety improvements to the track, but nothing, I suppose, that's greatly going to affect it.
I'm going to make a bold prediction.
Love it.
And say Maldonado's going to win again.
Well, he really impressed there last year, didn't he? And he has a great record in GP2 there as well.
So I would say Maldonado, and I'd like to think that Button will have a slight resurgence, because he did so well last year, and he should hopefully all do well again this year.
Imagine Maldonado winning two races back to back. That would be something. Perry?
The best thing that I love about Monaco Grand Prix is its unpredictability. And don't worry, I'm not trying to get out of anything. I'll give you an answer in a minute. But the fact is, you never know what can happen, especially if the heavens decide to open. But the best thing about that race is that anything can happen at any given time. I personally am looking to see the Lotus team do very well. Possibly even Kimi get up there. Now, it's been a while since he's been round there, but, you know, tight corners, shifting it around, I think he is going to know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Ben?
I'm actually going to go different completely. I think McLaren will get a 1-2 at Monaco. The reason being, I think, as I said...
You mean they'll finally get it right?
I think it has to come together at some point. Button is very good around there. I think Hamilton's got unfinished business after last year with the penalties and the stewards and the accidents. I think he's got unfinished business. He loves Monaco. Button's good around there. I'm going to go for Hamilton 1 and Button 2.
I was hoping you were going to say who'd finish 1 or 2. I'll probably go for Kimi again. I know I said him at Barcelona, so I'll just keep saying Kimi until he wins a race. Because it's got to happen at some point.
It'd be nice to see. And he showed that he doesn't need any refreshers on anything. He just gets back in the car and drives it like a demon. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But also, look out for Weber as well, I think.
Well,
he's pretty handy around there. So
I'd be happy to see Martin.
And that RB8 is looking better.
Yeah, it's probably better than it looked at the weekend, really, isn't it? That's fair to say.
I think that track, they didn't suit the track, I think, initially. But, yeah, so Monaco should suit them better, I think.
I think it'll be a big weekend for Caterham as well, because, quite honestly, at this point, they are 11th in the championship by way of Marussia's 14th place finish in Australia, and there are only about five tracks where you're going to get an unpredictable race that will get them that high a classified finish. Monaco is one of them, probably Monza, and Montreal would be the others. So Caterham could do with a few smashes in front of them and keep their reliability, and then maybe they can pick up the 13th place that has got them 10th in the last two seasons. Brilliant, gents. I think we should wrap it up there, as we're already well over time, just like I overwrite all my stories. So thank you, Ben, Perry, David, for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure. And as always, throughout the season, there'll be full Lotus and Caterham coverage over at the Eastern Daily Press website, edp24.co.uk. You can read my weekly column on that website, which is in every Wednesday's Eastern Daily Press. You can Twitter me, Michael J. Bailey, on the wonderful Twitter. We'll be doing these podcasts regularly. They will be on iTunes eventually, but at the moment we're trying to sort that out. So instead, get over to edp24.co.uk/F1podcast to listen to our ramblings, which I guess you've probably already done as you're listening now. It's been an absolute pleasure. I suppose you should also say gridwalk.tv, David?
Yeah, gridwalk.tv is my website. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at gridwalk.
Brilliant.
Nice and simple.
Fantastic stuff. And I think that is pretty much all the business. Gents, thank you. Thank you for all for listening. And we will see you post-Monaco.